Right now, the U.S. Supreme Court today upheld the nationwide ban on so-called partial birth abortion. Medically, the procedure is known as intact dilation and extraction. The court's ruling said the 2003 Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act does not violate a woman's constitutional right to have an abortion. The ruling marks the first time the High Court has upheld a nationwide ban on a specific procedure in an abortion, and it opens the door to possible further restrictions. If you have questions about the Supreme Court's decision, what it means for women or for doctors, give us a call. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. There's also a conversation underway at our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Joining us to talk about today's ruling is David Savage, who covers the Supreme Court for the Los Angeles Times. He's with us from his office here in Washington. I know it's a very busy day for you, David. We appreciate you taking the time.
Hi, Neil.
First of all, on its face, seems to be quite a victory for opponents of abortion.
Well, yes, absolutely. It's a reflection of the impact of President Bush. 7 years ago, the court had a very similar law, a state law from Nebraska, struck it down 5-4. Justice O'Connor was in the majority. She joined the majority that said this law is unconstitutional because it could affect or jeopardize the health of some women undergoing abortions at the fourth or fifth month. She's now retired, replaced by Sam Alito. And he, you know, sort of tipped the balance the other way, 5-4, to uphold the law. And Justice Kennedy said, he wrote a very broad opinion and basically said it's okay for the government to impose restrictions on abortion for the purpose of promoting fetal life. And so I would think this is the beginning of a move. This would really encourage states to pass more restrictions or regulations designed to discourage or dissuade women from having abortions.
As opposed to a frontal assault, if you will, on Roe v. Wade, the famous Supreme Court decision, there's been a strategy of chipping away, imposing various restrictions, age restrictions, parental consent, and the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act seems to fall directly into that line.
Yes, that's exactly right. And as I say, I think more of the same. There have been some laws talked about, for example, that a woman and her doctor would have to have a sonogram and talk about and study the sonogram before she undergoes an abortion. The doctors and the supporters of the abortion rights say that's a meaningless exercise, an expensive exercise. The proponents of such laws say, well, they may dissuade some women from having abortions. And I read Kennedy's opinion as saying that he and the majority would uphold those kinds of regulations now.
And this was a 5-4 vote?
Yes. John Roberts, Sam Alito, Justices Scalia and Thomas added a separate statement saying they would vote to overturn Roe versus Wade entirely. Roberts and Alito didn't join that, but they did go along with the Kennedy opinion saying it's okay to regulate abortion more strictly.
In his writing for the majority, Justice Anthony Kennedy said, "It is self-evident that a mother who comes to regret her choice to abort must struggle with grief more anguished and sorrow more profound when she learns only after the event that what she once did not know, that she allowed a doctor to pierce the skull and vacuum the fast-developing brain of her unborn child, a child assuming the human form," and described this procedure as shocking.
Yes. This is actually not a new view for Kennedy. He was one of the dissenters 7 years ago. He's somebody who's, you know, the central person on the court on a whole lot of issues, but particularly on abortion right now, because he's somebody who, with some reluctance, cast a fifth vote to preserve Roe versus Wade in 1992. There looked to be a majority to overturn Roe then, and Kennedy said his view was that he was personally opposed to abortion, but he couldn't bring himself to overturn the right entirely because it was a long-standing right. But he said at that time, and he said again, repeatedly since then, that he thinks the government can do a lot to discourage abortions and to dissuade women from having them. So now he's in the central position. He's the fifth the person right in between. He won't vote to overturn Roe entirely, but he is going to go along with a lot of regulations that make abortion more difficult.
It is a reasonable inference, he wrote, that a necessary effect of the regulation and the knowledge it conveys will be to encourage some women to carry the infant to full term, thus reducing the absolute number of late-term abortions. The medical profession furthermore may find different and less shocking methods to abort the fetus in the second trimester, thereby accommodating legislative demand. And David, I think it's fair to point out that this does not affect the vast majority of the abortions carried out in this country.
No, that's right. Something like 90% of abortions take place during the first trimester. They are the doctors use a suction tube to remove the fetus. When you get into the second trimester, the fourth and fifth month, it becomes some form of surgery is required. The real medical dispute here is what method can be used. The D&E method, which is what the doctors refer to, is the doctor essentially pulls the little thing out piece by piece. That's the legal, safe method. This other method, the doctors try to remove the fetus intact. Some doctors say that is less risky. There's less chance of bleeding, less chance of infection. And so this has become a huge symbolic issue about midterm abortions, but as a medical matter, it's a question about which procedure you use, and now the court is basically saying doctors must, if they want to perform abortions at this stage, they must use the D&E method, not the one of removing the fetus intact.
And if you have questions about the legal logic of today's decision or its meaning in terms of what the law may be and what the political effect may be, give us a call at 800-989-8255. And the other side, writing in dissent, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg describes today's decision as alarming. She wrote, it refuses to take Casey and Stenberg seriously. Those are two cases that followed on after Roe. It tolerates, indeed applauds, federal intervention to ban nationwide a procedure found necessary and proper in certain cases by the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. She's saying, the professionals here say this is good medicine.
Yes, that's right. And she said the court has always said before that the woman's health is paramount, that we're not going to allow the government to impose restrictions that jeopardize the health of women. And she said medical experts said in the trial in this case that for some women, this will force them to undergo riskier surgery, and the government should not be able to do that. These are legal abortions, she stressed, prior to the end of the 6 month. They're legal abortions. Why shouldn't doctors be able to do the abortions in the way that doctors believe is safer?
And again, going back to the majority opinion written by Anthony Kennedy, physicians are not entitled to ignore regulations that direct them to use reasonable alternative procedures.
Yes. Kennedy was quite blunt that even though he acknowledged that a fair number of medical experts say that there couldn't be significant health risks here, nonetheless, since there is another way to do the abortion, you must use that other way. It would remind me if men were told, by the way, you might have prostate cancer, and doctors could either do the surgery to remove your prostate or do radiation, and we've decided radiation is what we prefer, so you can't do the surgery. A lot of men would say, well, wait a minute, I heard that the surgery is the better procedure, and this decision basically says, yes, but there's another good procedure, and you should use the other good procedure, not this type of surgery.
Mm-hmm. Getting back to the politics of the court, this is one of the key issues that many of the supporters of President Bush in both of his elections felt most strongly about, and this has to be a day of tremendous satisfaction for them.
Absolutely. The National Right to Life Committee has been campaigning on this issue for 12 years, and they had a series of frustrations. Bill Clinton wouldn't sign a ban on partial birth abortions for the reason we talked about. He was concerned about women's health. A series of states passed such bans, 30 states in all. The Supreme Court then struck them down in 2000. So the Right to Life Committee has been campaigning for 12 years to get a ban on this procedure on the books and upheld, and today they've succeeded.
Let's get a caller on the line. Let's start with Eric, and Eric is with us from Missouri.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, good show.
Thank you.
I'm just curious to know why it's called a partial birth abortion. It just seems like such a charged term. What does it refer to? And who uses that term?
Again, the medical term is intact dilation and extraction. And I think the partial birth abortion part, David, comes from opponents.
Yes, that's right. It was a term coined by Doug Johnson of the National Right to Life Committee and a congressman named Charles Kennedy, both of whom wanted to highlight this issue in 1994-95. Kennedy and Johnson said, you know, the little fetuses, they were working off line drawings. They weren't actually working with abortion doctors. But they had a line drawing that sort of showed the little fetus emerging partially from the woman, and therefore they thought partial birth abortion was a way to, as you said, it is a charged term, and that was their intent. They wanted to dramatize what this is about, and they certainly succeeded in dramatizing it.
Is it fair, David, to say that, in fact, this is a procedure that's not actually conducted all that often, but seen as a very emotional, winnable case by its opponents?
I think that's correct. There's been a lot of dispute as to how often this procedure is used. There are something like 1.3 million abortions in a year. They're said to be somewhere between 600 and I've seen numbers up to 2,000 or 3,000 per year of this procedure, this method of doing abortion. So it's, relatively speaking, it's not a lot. And it does, I think, for the opponents, sort of it succeeded in illustrating what's troubling about later abortions, that when you get several months down the road, you're talking about a little fetus that is 5 or 6 inches long. It's starting to look like a little baby, long way from being a baby, but it puts, in a sense, a face on this very difficult issue.
And it's also probably fair to point out this is hardly the first time language has been used by either side in this debate, going right back to their self-descriptions as being pro-life and pro-choice.
Yes.
Yeah. Eric, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
We're talking with David Savage of the Los Angeles Times about today's Supreme Court decision upholding a law known as the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller in. This is Carol. Carol with us from Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Hi.
Hi.
I know in some past cases that have come up to the court, there's always been the argument, well, the health or the life of the mother is an issue. And I've never quite understood that for late-term abortions, because I think if it were really, truly a case for the woman's life, that they could do cesarean section, and then, you know, the baby would not be put through that kind of gruesome taking apart. I know cesarean section is surgery, but unfortunately, it's very common now, and women are choosing this electively for their full-term babies. I think roughly 30% of births are cesarean.
David, did this kind of there were some medical considerable medical testimony that the justices relied upon here?
Yes. Well, there was a trial in Nebraska in this case, and there was 2 weeks of medical testimony. So there was a lot of back and forth medical testimony. Now, remember, these tend to be abortions at 16, 17, 18 weeks, and I think most women at that stage don't want to undergo a cesarean, so that's pretty serious surgery. So while that's an option, that's not a desirable option for a lot of women. And it is true, this is not a case where the woman's life is in jeopardy. The argument is that the partial birth method is safer in some instances, as I say, because it's less likely to cause a bleeding and infection. And so the doctors who use it say that it is simply a safer, better procedure for the women at this stage. There are other ways to do it, as I say, but the doctors who sort of fought for this said we ought to be able to do the safest procedure for the woman at that stage.
Thanks, Carol.
Thank you.
Let's get one, I think, last caller in, and this is going to be Anna. Anna with us from Ann Arbor.
Hi.
Hi.
Actually, recently I had to terminate a pregnancy due to chromosomal issues, which weren't detected until about the time of the amnio, which is well into the second trimester. And I was curious how this would affect women facing similar decisions. I know it's probably probably not a common thing, but certainly since it happened to me, I've learned about scores of women who are sort of facing this choice, of, mm-hmm. and I was learning how it affected that.
Well, I think, Anna, what it would mean is that your doctor has sort of fewer choices as to how to do the abortion at that stage.
I was personally just induced into labor.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Well, and so I didn't know if that technically was you know, considered abortion in this ban.
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I've heard some doctors say that they actually fear that if abortions were induced, this law could be read to also affect those types of abortions, but that was not really debated or decided in this case. I would assume those abortions would still be legal, but I don't know for sure.
Okay.
Thank you, Anna.
You're welcome.
There's an explainer that separates fact and fiction on this procedure at our website. You can link to it at npr.org/blogofthenation. David Savage, thanks very much for being with us, as always.
Thank you, Neil.
David Savage covers the Supreme Court for the Los Angeles Times. He joined us today from his office here in Washington, D.C. Ira Flatow will be here on Friday with Science Friday. Rebecca Roberts will be here tomorrow and next week when I'm off. I'm Neil Conan. We'll talk to you, I guess, at the end of the month. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.